Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert Rick Poulos. Rick is a scholar, artist, playwright, theater producer, performer, and educator. He's currently a doctoral student at Texas A&M. In 2021, he published the article, Pepsi Cola's Number Fever Fiasco, How the Media Portrays the Actors of a Crisis. Let's hear what he has to say about Pepsi Number Fever. Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Rebecca. Thank you for having me.
So could you start off by giving us a little background on your field of study and how you became interested in the Pepsi Number Fever Fiasco?
Okay, so I started a PhD program in 2019, in the fall of 2019. And so I'm continuing down that path right now. I'm at Texas A&M University. But I was in a different PhD program in 2019. I transferred to Texas A&M. And I got one of those Facebook feeds. I don't know if you've ever gotten these. They say, remember when? And so that came up on my Facebook feed. And I was like, remember when what? What is this number fever thing? What is this fiasco? What are they talking about? I mean, I was alive in the early 90s. I was a teenager, but I don't remember this story at all. So I clicked on the link and I read a little bit about number fever. And I was like, this is fascinating. This is intriguing because, you know, as your viewers know already, it touched every aspect of Filipino life, from government to corporations like Pepsi Cola. So it was just a fascinating topic that I then started researching in the fall of 2019.
So what were the Cola Wars? And what is the history of cola in the Philippines?
That is a fantastic question. So the Cola Wars were a general war that happened between Coca-Cola and Pepsi. And it not only happened in the Philippines, but also happened in the United States. Mm. And it really amped up in the 80s. But contextually in the Philippines, just to give you a little history of carbonated drinks on the island nation. You had Coca-Cola was there, I think, in the late 1800s. So they were already on the island, but it didn't really pick up. And it wasn't until 1946, right after World War II, a Midwesterner army guy in the United States brought over Pepsi with him. And that sort of started, opened up the market for Pepsi. And eventually what happened, it's very fascinating, Pepsi dominated the Filipino market. By the late 70s, early 80s, they had the majority share of the market. And then what happened was Coca-Cola came in and aggressively kind of fought for a market share. And that was at the beginning of the 80s. And I just want to read a quote from a great book, and everyone should check out this book. It's fantastic, by Tristan Donovan. It's called Fizz, How Soda Shook Up the World. And this is what he writes in his book. The battle was fierce. In the Philippines, one of the world's biggest consumers of carbonated drinks, Pepsi and Coke fought a war of attrition across the island nation. Dirty tactics followed too, with both companies hoarding each other's returnable bottles, filling fields with their enemies' glassware in the hope of forcing them to invest in new containers rather than more advertising. And so at the end of the 80s, the tables had turned and Pepsi was not the dominant share, did not have the dominant share of the market at that point. So at the start of the 90s, when Number Fever comes into play, you have kind of Pepsi is sort of desperate to get back their market share.
So what was Pepsi Number Fever? What was the contest and how invested in it were Filipinos?
So I think, you know, it was a very simple marketing gimmick, and I am going to call it a gimmick because it really is. So what they did was they put underneath the bottle caps, what the Filipinos call crowns, the bottle crowns, they had a number. And so it was sort of like a lottery. And each week they would announce a winning number through the media, usually on the six o'clock news, and then the next day in all of the newspapers and sometimes on the radio as well. And it was a very simple game. If you had the winning number, you won 1,000,000 pesos. Now, 1,000,000 pesos, it contextually made you a millionaire in the Philippines, but it wasn't like $1,000,000 in American dollars. The exchange is not the same. But it was a lot of money to Filipino people because at the time they were going through economic woes. They were just coming out of the Marcos regime. And we all remember Imelda Marcos, who spent lavishly, had, you know, rooms full of shoes. And so, but they were coming into this transition period where a lot of people were out of work and just the prospects for a good life were bad. So this was a lot of money to most of the people living in the Philippines at that time. And that was basically the game, you know, and people played and it worked for Pepsi. They eked in and started digging away at Coke's share of the market during the promotion, so much so that they extended the promotion out. It wasn't supposed to last as long as it was, but it was a super success for the Pepsi-Cola company.
And how did the contest go wrong? Or the gimmick?
I think this is the piece of the story that Pepsi didn't really own up to. So they blamed the wrong number being called, which was 349. That was the number that they called, which actually has become a part of the language and culture of the Philippines. They will say, if you've ever been duped, you can say, I've been 349. It actually became a part of the language. I love that. But so Pepsi said that it was a computer glitch. They used a computer glitch narrative that the wrong number was generated. Now, this wasn't the first time that Pepsi had this problem with this game. See, this number fevers actually had been very successful for Pepsi in Latin America. And just a month ahead of May 1992, when they announced the wrong number in the Philippines, they had a similar problem in Chile. In fact, they blamed that not on a computer glitch, but they blamed it on a fax that was hard to read.
Wow.
I mean, if you all remember faxes, I guess we still sort of use them. But yeah, I guess the printout was hard to read and the person that read the number read it wrong. And so that also led to a similar situation, which was just a month before. So you would think that they just had this happen in another country, they would be like really on it in the Philippines. But something went awry and they realized quite quickly that it was a mistake. And they got really nervous between the announcement on the 6 o'clock news and like 10 o'clock at night. They were already strategizing on what to do. How do we fix this? What can we say? So that was the situation with that for Pepsi and also for the people of the Philippines, who in the middle of the night, they retracted that number and issued a new winning number. And that really upset people, really angered people.
So, yeah, what was the reaction from the public, I guess, for the following weeks and months?
Yeah, so there were a bunch of people that came out and kind of voiced their opinions through the media about sort of what happened. And so you kind of have all these different players coming into this crisis and speaking out about the issues, speaking to each other, speaking against each other. And so you had Pepsi, who kind of, you know, came out and sort of denied that they did anything wrong. Oh, it was just a mistake. We made a boo-boo, which was one of the narratives in the newspapers. Then you had sort of the Filipino people who, you know, they came down with their crowns. And the thing is just a reminder that a lot of them not only didn't just have one 349 bottle cap, some of them had like 10,
wow.
You know, so they had like, they were like looking at being millionaires multiple times over. So a lot of them started showing up the next day at the Pepsi bottling plants, demanding their money. And of course this got really ugly fast. And people came out and, you know, there were sort of human interest angles in the newspapers, you know, because what happened was people like thought, this is life-changing. You know, I'm going to be a million. I'm going to be able to send my kids to college. I'm going to be able to buy a house. I'm going to be comfortable. I'm going to go on vacation. Like all of these hopes and dreams happened between the announcement on the news and the next morning they were dashed. You know, it was obviously going to be a situation where people were very emotional and angry. And so that's what really happened with the public. And then the government had to get involved. And that was a whole nother level where the government came in and started holding hearings, started talking more about consumer protection, you know, talking about rules for doing some sort of marketing schemes that Pepsi was using, like, you know, because they wanted, it had to be on the up and up. And part of the problem for the government was that Pepsi sort of changed the rules in the middle of the night, and that wasn't right. So they changed the number. They issued a new number, retracted the old number, but they also argued that 349 didn't count anyways, because there was also a 10-digit code. I think it was 10 digits that was underneath 349 that was supposed. So the winning number was supposed to be that winning number if it was 349. And then also the code had to match. But on all of their their promotion for and rules for Number Fever, they never mentioned that code. And the government thought it was a little sneaky that they were now using it, even though in all of the published information about the winning the prize and how it worked, they never mentioned that. So the government really came in and sort of, you know, tore into Pepsi. Pepsi responded by taking out a full-page advertisement denouncing the Senate hearings as terrorism, as anarchy. I mean, and it really upset the politicians, especially Senator Arroyo, who eventually became the president of the Philippines. I think she was president from like 2001 to 2011. But at this time, she was a senator. And she was just like, you know, look, if Pepsi, you know, wanted to like attack what was in the report and contradict what was in the report, I would be fine with that. But basically to tell us we were setting up this situation as an act of, almost as an act of terrorism, she was like, I couldn't stand it. So that was sort of all the voices that came, you know. And then you had the activists. There were also the activists that came out and started like, talking to the government about protecting consumers, demanding that Pepsi pay up. But it was too much money. Pepsi was never going to pay up that. There was too many. It was like 800,000 people had these $1 million paces. It was like billions and billions of dollars. So that was kind of what happened in the media and the newspaper and the newspapers and on the evening news, how people came in and talked about this situation.
Now, in your article, you write about crisis communication.
Yes.
What is crisis communication, and how did Pepsi use this theory or method during the fiasco?
Well, so crisis communication is a subfield of the discipline of communication, which is my area. And crisis communication, really, the original paradigm was that you would look at an organization in crisis. And the thing about crisis, actually, two of the preeminent scholars of crisis communication are faculty members at Texas A&M, where I'm at, and they put out the crisis communication handbook. They're Professor Coombs and Professor Holliday. And what they say about crisis is say part of the interest comes from the fact that crisis is dramatic. It's newsworthy. That's what they say. So it's sort of the study about what an organization would do. Now, that's kind of the traditional paradigm. And I'll give you an example. One of the original kind of inspirations for the subdiscipline or subfield of crisis communication was the Tylenol murders in the 1980s. 1982, you had a young girl at first, Mary Kellerman. She was 12-year-old, got sick after taking Tylenol, and then she eventually died. Eventually, seven people died from the poisoning. Somebody had tampered with Tylenol and put potassium cyanide in it. And the owners and producers of Tylenol, Johnson & Johnson, kind of had this very classic response. And actually, it's a response by an organization that I think a lot of companies still look to because it really worked. And so there were sort of these five steps that they took. Johnson & Johnson, first, they were forthcoming and honest. So when they found out about it, they came out and they said, yep, this is happening, no doubt. And then they acted quickly and decisively. They pulled Tylenol. They tried to strategize on what they could do to protect their customers and protect the public. They also took responsibility immediately. That was one thing. They really didn't do anything wrong. I mean, if somebody did something, but the pressure went on to Johnson & Johnson, and they're just saying, yep, we are going to take care of this. They didn't deny anything. They didn't go through any of that process. They really just took ownership of the problem. And then they treated people with respect. And the final thing that that Johnson & Johnson did in terms of the way that they communicated with the public is that they showed good corporate behavior, right? So, and they realized that this will pay in dividends later. They probably didn't know at the time. They just knew it was the right thing to do in the way that they responded. And, you know, out of that situation, you know, Tylenol changed, Johnson & Johnson changed their manufacturing process for bottling their medication. So, you know, things like the tamper-resistant top that we're used to these days, they didn't exist before this situation. So they really took action, right? So that was one of the, in terms of crisis communication, was one of the classic examples. And then later in the late 1980s, there was a whole different situation, and that was the Exxon Valdez running aground in Alaska. And that was sort of a different situation with a company in crisis, and it was handled differently too. But one of the things about that is that it like Number Fever, it extended to all levels of society in America and even globally, because you had it, you know, you had the government at the time, which was the first Bush presidency. They were like, they wanted to go into Alaska and tap into the natural resources. They wanted to drill and do all sorts of things. And when the Exxon Valdez happened, that stopped. You know, the public was angry. They weren't happy about this situation. And at the same time, you have news cycles that were 24 hours. You had CNN. And this was like, it seemed like when I was 14 when this happened. And I just remember it was in the newspaper, on the news, all the time. And the weird thing that Exxon did that was very different from Johnson & Johnson in terms of the way they handled the crisis was that they didn't really take ownership of it. They sort of said, well, we have this ship and we have to investigate to see what was going on with the captain before we do it. And that was not, people didn't really like that. That was kind of like a weird way to deal with the situation. And, you know, if you were alive during that time, you'll recall that it was kind of like this back and forth. And, you know, even things like, why would we need to know that you didn't own the ship, that somebody else owned the ship, that they were just taking your cargo? Right. Like those sort of arguments don't really play well to the public.
Right, which is similar to the Pepsi, how Pepsi responded.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So yeah. We ask all of our guest experts this question. At the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or a thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the Pepsi Number Fever fiasco in the Philippines, who or what would that be?
I have to blame Pepsi. I have to blame the way that they responded to this. You know, I think that there were a couple of things that they did right and a couple of things that they did wrong, you know, and in the media, they were sort of portrayed as, you know, as kind of just making a mistake. And then they were also demonized, you know, for everything that they did to the people. But they also were portrayed as kind of like, you know, kind of nice. Oh, well, they're going to give people $18 for each crown that they have. So that's something, the consolation prize. But I think that they came into this ugly fight, against the activists, against the government. And, you know, there was a lot of pointing fingers, you know, not taking responsibility immediately. I mean, they did apologize and they offered that money to a lot of people who took that money. But I think that because they, you know, like that one page ad that they took out against the government, I mean, it just reeks of like, you know, mudslinging. And so I think that that was not the right thing for Pepsi to do. So that's who I would blame in the center of all this.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for talking to us today about this lesser known and incredible fiasco.
It is an incredible story to learn about. And, you know, I mean, in the end, you have to really remember that there were people that thought their lives had changed that night. And, you know, for the better. And that's a really hard position for somebody to be in, that one day, you know, you're struggling to feed your family. And then the next day you think that you're going to wake up and be able to do everything you ever dreamed of. And so we have to remember that in the center of this, I think you have the Filipino people that were really, really hurt by this. But they were also a very forgiving group, too. There were a lot of Filipinos that forgave Pepsi for what they did.
Wow. Well, again, thanks for coming on the show and talking to us.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact-checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
What, Rebecca?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
She doesn't know where to start. Just, there's a lot.
You know what I was thinking? It was like it's just so incredible to me that we didn't know about this. Like,
I know.
How are we not, especially as comedians, how is something this like not something we've referenced all the time? And like the 349.
We got 349.
We got 349. And yeah. I'm going to use that from now on.
Well, it makes me think of, you know, they added catfish to the dictionary back when those guys made catfish.
Yeah.
And it's like 349. It's just now it's part of the culture. It was such a significant moment in that part of the world that it became a part of the culture. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on, Clayton.
Part of me is like, was that a conscious effort on Pepsi's part to kind of keep it hush-hush because it's bad publicity? Or was there something else going on that we were so distracted by that this just didn't make, it's early news 24-hour cycle. So maybe we just weren't as focused on it because it wasn't I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, nowadays with Twitter and our phones, essentially, like we're always on the news.
We would have heard about it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we were kids when it happened.
Yeah.
So we were really like tapped into CNN or, you know, maybe watching the nightly news as much. But still, I'm as many of these tragedies, you know, we learn about them and I just can't believe we're not constantly talking about them, because this one also feels like one of those that, number one, could have been prevented, obviously. And even if it had happened, the mistake had happened, it could have been dealt with in a manner that wouldn't have created such a larger problem, right? So as one of those, I feel like it's one that we can learn from. You know, just like what he was talking about, like crisis communication, like that is good on all levels. Like, yes, in a huge corporate level, but like in a family situation, like,
right.
Yes. You know, just anything.
Own up.
Yeah.
Take responsibility.
At work.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, even just saying him saying that they had kind of changed the rules of the game overnight. It's like no one who plays a game is cool with that.
No,
like that's bound to cause an argument amongst you and your circle of friends playing this game. Imagine, you know, and of course with the nation of people who are so invested. And I think he really made the point, which is like the ultimate point, that these people really thought their lives were going to change playing this game, and that they were going to, you know, the thought of being able to send your kid to college because you won some prize money and before you couldn't do that. Like, that's, people are really invested. That's really personal.
Upsetting.
You know, and it reminds me of the time, Clayton, where we were playing Monopoly together and you were about to lose, but then you landed on Go and collected $500 and you said, that's the rule. And I said, well, you just totally made that up right in the middle of the game. You ended up winning that game, actually. And so, you know, it makes me wonder, did you handle that crisis?
That's a lie. What you just said.
Clayton None would never happened. Do that during Monopoly.
First he of said, all, you can't collect $500. I'm a stickler for the rules.
Exactly.
I'm the one who's mad at people because I'm like, that's not the rule. And then the fight breaks out.
This is why Clayton and I get along so well together.
You know, well, I remember that event happening much differently.
Okay. Well, I mean, what else? Just talking about how they put out the ad.
I'll tell you what stuck out to me also that Rick mentioned, which was that, how about this one army soldier coming over in 1946 after Coke had dominated the market and just saying, hey guys, check this out. And then boom, an explosion, a Pepsi explosion.
Cola Wars. It's so weird.
Right. Yeah. Another thing that kind of, I just had to wrap my mind around was the fact that Coke was around in the late 1800s.
I know, when he said that, I was like, he said that incorrectly.
Wait, 1800s.
Come on.
Coke's not that old, but wow.
Yeah.
It's really old.
So, and also the fact that the government had to get involved, like how big, imagine, you know, it was just so big. Their government is like, you know, just they took out that ad and the senators are like fighting about it. It's like,
well,
what
it was like we
happening?
Talked about it came at like a really critical moment in the in the country. And so it was sort of being used as, I don't know, like a cudgel on either side. But anyway, it was.
Well, and I feel like we talk about this more so nowadays because corporations, I feel like, loom so large in our lives. But it seems like really, I mean, fair for a government to be like, this, you know, this company is coming into our country and has such a big impact on the culture, and there was so much promise that, maybe we should be regulating how these companies are interacting with our people. I mean, we're worried about that too. We're worried about companies nowadays being ethical or, you know, taking
companies are basically their own dictatorships. I mean, their companies are corporations. They have, I mean, you look at Apple. I mean, how much is Apple worth? It's like at least over like $100,000 at this point. Maybe even $200,000.
We talk about apples all the time.
Yep.
No, but it's just like, you know, you do have to consider that these companies, they sway.
They're very powerful.
Well, they sway right. the world in a way that countries do.
Yeah. Right. You make a decision, it has an impact on the public, and you got to be, I guess, pretty. I would imagine now Pepsi has really learned their lesson and probably does kind of, I mean, who knows? It's to be seen, but it seems like this whole crisis communication about immediately taking responsibility and being, you know, proactive about fixing the problem, like that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And Pepsi really just, they really played dirty. Mm-hmm. They just denied and kind of, you know, didn't take any responsibility. And ultimately that's going to upset. I mean, just listening to it, I'm like, that's not right. We talked about that. That's not right.
So we ended up sending Pepsi, I believe.
We gave the big finger wag to Pepsi.
Oh.
Oh.
And we threw corporate shamelessness in jail, which is really like, you know, we really zeroed in on, I think, Pepsi's behavior is what we threw, you know, when it came down to what we wanted to throw in jail. But it's all Pepsi related.
Yeah. And I think the reason that felt right to me was that it's not just Pepsi that's doing that across the board. So, you know, if you want to nip it in the bud, as they say, you got to kind of get to the root of why they're doing it, right? Well,
yeah, you're mixing metaphors a bit because the bud creates the root over a long period of time. But you can't nip it in the bud. It's too late to nip it in the bud.
These corporations have been planted
and they've become big old forests. So we
nip
do
it
need
in
to,
the forest.
I think we have to burn down the forest, but that's actually bad. For the environment.
Yeah, we don't want to.
So we can't do that. We're stuck in between a rock and a hard place.
I love all these phrases that we're throwing in here. What are other ones?
I think that's all. We covered that's all them we all. Got. Do we want to change? Do we want to send Pepsi to the alarmist jail, or do we want to stick with the mentality behind Pepsi? I think that just with the information, knowing that, you know, Rick was telling us about the Tylenol murders that happened in the 80s and how Johnson & Johnson at that time did kind of deal with it in a manner that was, I don't know, felt better to the public.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it didn't have to be this way. I think that is a part of corporate shamelessness. But I also think that Pepsi as a corporation supported that and that was the culture there. So what do we do here?
I mean, we could swap it. We could give corporate shamelessness the finger wag and we could throw Pepsi in jail if you really want to punish Pepsi.
Okay.
But I also feel fine keeping it the same because I feel like
they're one or the other. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do feel like if we put Pepsi in jail.
Yeah.
That we could task them with providing their ice cold Pepsi beverages for the rest of the prisoners gratis. We make them do it for free.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
So you're thinking about personal gain right now.
Well, I'm just trying to leverage this situation to help us personally. Yes,
okay.
So you as
a member of the alarmists are using your corporate shamelessness in order to get Pepsi.
Well, have you looked at how much we spend on soda at our our facility?
I'm not going.
It's a lot of money.
I'm not going. Okay. So I think we should let's just keep it as is, just because I feel like just understand that when we say corporate shamelessness, we're talking about Pepsi in this scenario.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, before we go, I want to talk about just rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the show. Now, I feel like we haven't had any recent reviews, and that really kind of hurts us.
Hurts my feelings.
Hurts Chris's feelings, and it hurts just our, I don't know how Apple podcasts work. I don't know how they come up with their system of like, who's listening to what and what pops up when, but it definitely doesn't help us. And so if you love the show and you want us to continue making new episodes and you haven't already subscribed or rated and reviewed, please do so now. Clayton, what is our latest review, which hasn't been for a while?
Yes, I have one here from Zeta, Momo F. 5.
Okay.
New listener. I'm a fairly new listener. I listened to a few episodes and decided to go back to the beginning, and I've been binge listening. I love to see how you've evolved. I especially love the moment when you developed the big slap. I have aspirations to be a secondary history teacher, and I've decided I'd love to integrate the alarmist style into my teaching. Aww. Thanks for the inspiration.
Aw, I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And I love to hear that we have new listeners who are catching up. So thanks again to everyone who's listening and catching up. And stay tuned, because next week we're going to be talking about the Johnston, Pennsylvania flood.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.